go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to the next episode of Deep Space High, a podcast where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest episodes from today's sci-fi TV. I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve.
So we got a few announcements here for us, for you guys. So Steve, you want to go ahead and get started with those breakdowns?
Sure. Well, as everyone knows, we're coming to an end on Star Trek Picard. We have this episode that we're going to go over today, and next week's episode is part two of the finale. So we just want to announce that starting the first Tuesday of July, which is the 7th, Chris and I will start going over The Mandalorian.
Yes, I know you've been very excited or very much looking forward to this one. Now that we're going to be switching from Star Trek to Star Wars, and you're a big fan of The Mandalorian, so I know you've been looking forward to this.
I know. I think we'll probably have to end up switching roles. You go from being the expert on this subject matter to a series where I'll be the expert in that subject matter. So it'll be an interesting change of pace. Starting 2 weeks or after the next episode, we will do an episodic breakdown of The Mandalorian. We'll start with the season premiere, and then we'll do one episode per episode of The Mandalorian until we wrap that up. And then from there, you know, that's still TBD, but at least, you know, that kind of lays out the next 10 weeks or so of podcasting that you'll hear on Deep Space High.
Yeah, and you'll probably hear about some latest news that is going on with The Mandalorian probably in our next episode. I mean, there's a lot of new news that's been coming out with season two, so I'm sure it's going to be a lot to break down in the next week's episode.
Yes, and if we stay on schedule, which I'm pretty sure we will, you know, we'll finish up season one of The Mandalorian probably at least a month, probably a month and a half before season two comes out. So then, you know, maybe if people don't want to listen weekly, they just want to go and binge right before season two comes out. That's all good with me.
Good with me, too. I'm looking forward to Mandalorian. So it's going to be a nice break from Star Trek. As much as I do love Star Trek, it does kind of get tough rewatching like the same episode over and over and over again, just to make sure that you kind of have that understanding like we've had to do with these shows. So it'll be nice to take a break for a little bit.
Everyone mark that down 2 weeks from today, or if you're listening 2 years from now, two episodes from now, check us out as we review and discuss The Mandalorian on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't shy away from those United Kingdom listeners, because they will have Disney Plus by then.
Do they not have Disney Plus yet?
No, they do now. I think it came out in March or May or something. I don't know.
That would suck.
Came out about 6 months later for them.
So, real quick, before we get started talking about this episode, real quick, what are we drinking today?
I am having Boomba Rum.
Boomba Rum. Is that any good? Never had it before.
Yes, you have. And yes, it is.
Have I? Oh, is that the banana rum that you...
Yeah.
The good... Oh, that's the good shit. That's good shit. I was really surprised when you said how much, like, it tastes just like bananas, really good. I'm not a rum guy, but that shit's pretty good. Just saying. Mm-hmm. I'm drinking a nice cold Corona Light myself. Light, because I'm trying to watch my calories. Or watch that figure of mine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That hourglass plump, you know, round violet from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Exactly. Well, let's go ahead and get started with this episode.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it!
I'm gonna go do it!
All right, well, what do we have in store for today, Steven?
Today, we are going over Star Trek Picard, Season 1, Episode 9. I don't know if this is Et in Arcadia or if it's E.T. in Arcadia Ego Part 1.
I don't know if it would be in if it would be E.T. I figured it would be a capital E.T. with like the show, because E.T. was a like extraterrestrial was an acronym.
Yeah.
So I think it's ET. ET in
so Acadia. I think it is. That's Eagle. How I've been saying it. So we'll say ET in Acadia Eagle Part 1.
Maybe it's Latin or something?
I don't know.
I don't know.
But we're here. We've reached it. We're in the part one of the two-part season finale of Star Trek Picard.
Yes, and no flashback this time.
Yes,
so we did not get that 7 of 9.
No, so it's staying at 6 of 9 for another week.
Yes, Dad will be very happy with that. Oh, it's funny, and I already know what his reaction is going to be. He's like, damn right it is.
So, yep, no flashback this week. This episode actually starts with Girardi hiding under the table. Because she's terrified of the turbulence. As they're rolling through, what do they call it? I keep calling it a wormhole, but it's a...
I know what the name is. I just can't think of it right now. It's a Borg transwarp conduit. That's what it is.
Yeah, a conduit. Yeah. I kept putting wormhole because I know how to spell wormhole.
Okay. Well, transwarp conduit shouldn't be that hard to spell. Something I noticed was like Soji was like, hell yeah, this is nothing, bitch, while Dr. Girardi's freaking out under the table.
Yeah, and Picard says they travel. Once they get to the destination of the unnamed planet, Picard drops the bomb that they traveled 25 light years in the span of 15 minutes.
Yes. And in case anybody doesn't know, at warp 9, it usually takes about half a day to travel that fast. It's half a day per light year at warp 9. So it would take 12 and a half days at warp 9. Now, I know in the show it says like 2 days, but that could just be that it's at warp 9.99 by that time. So,
yeah, I think these ships go faster than they did in the original or in TNG, because I think the max they can do was like 9, or at least the Enterprise could do like 9, maybe 9.5.
The max speed for the Enterprise was 9.5. The fastest ship in the TNG universe was Voyager, which can travel at warp 9.975.
Yeah, and this is 30 years after all that. So chances are they're probably going faster than warp 10. And, you know, for all the Trekkies out there, they know that warp is it's a compounded speed. So, you know, warp 2 is not twice the speed as warp 1. It grows exponentially.
Mm-hmm. It's about warp 9 is about 789 times the speed of light.
Jesus.
But yeah, actually, you missed out on Voyager, because Voyager kind of made warp 10 irrelevant, which is weird because it's kind of contradictory. Like in the Next Generation, at the finale of the Next Generation, they talk about how they're in like warp 14, and then Voyager kind of goes in a different direction, saying that it's impossible to go past warp 10 because then you're reaching what's it called? I don't remember what the name of the term was, but supposedly you're traveling so fast that you can literally be at every point in space at the same time, which makes it a theoretical impossibility until they do it, and then they turn into a giant lizard. It's a weird episode, but they kind of ruined that whole past warp 10 thing.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it'll get explained. Maybe it'll get explained a little bit in 10 or in episode 10, but we'll see. But yeah, this episode, to get us back on topic. So they drop out of warp in orbit of this planet and are, you know, immediately chased by Narek, of course, because Narek is on their ass all the time.
Mm-hmm. And they just didn't know it.
Yeah. And then there's a firefight that ensues, or dogfight, whatever you want to call it.
Is it a dogfight in space?
Yeah, I guess it would constitute as a dogfight.
I guess so.
I consider, I mean, dogfight is like any...
Well, I mean, didn't they, who was it? When 7 of 9 went and rescued them and they didn't know who it was, and they weren't they talking about they were, that's a hell of a pilot, really good into dogfight or something like that? Didn't they even bring that up in that episode?
Might have.
Or am I just remembering shit that didn't happen?
You might be just remembering shit that didn't happen.
I could be. I do it a lot. I'm a pothead.
I'm going to call it a dogfight. And then it's weird. You get these weird... While the dogfight is ensuing, the cube drops out of the conduit, and then freaking the planet launches their defense systems, which is the wackest defense systems in all of defense systems.
Yeah, it's like giant flowers.
A planet not full of synthetics, but a planet with synthetics and some of the brightest minds, and they create giant flowers that can kill the electrical. I guess they can shut down all systems, so that's not a bad power.
Yeah, hey, they took down a Borg cube.
Yeah, and it was just one, I think. No, it had to be the other four.
Yeah, they said later on in the episode, skipping ahead a little bit, but they said that there was 15 total. They only have 5 left after the attack.
Because Rafi scanned 5 coming into orbit from the planet.
Well, it seems like a pretty effective way to doing it. Like, I think what they were trying to do is have it to where these flowers can engulf them. It siphons the power to where now they don't have any power. And then they let gravity just pull it back to the planet and crash it. And they can't stop it. It seems like a pretty effective way, a pretty effective planetary defense system, actually.
I guess, but...
And they can take a beating from the phasers.
I guess.
5 of them took down 3 ships.
Maybe it just seems, I don't know, maybe it just seems like an insignificant amount because of what we find out later in the episode.
It could be. Could be.
I don't know, it's just a weird planetary defense system. You can't have, like, ion cannons that shoot up at shit.
I guess not. I mean, it's like I said, it seems like a pretty effective system. It brought down the 3 ships. They were able to take phaser fire without, you know, being completely destroyed. And they were able to bring down a Borg cube, and not like an old Borg cube, but like a relatively new Borg cube. So I don't know. It seems pretty effective.
Yep. And then, like you were saying, they all crash land on the planet. And then that's kind of where we leave off. And it jumps into the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
After the intro song. Well, did we mention before the intro song that Picard kind of had an odd moment? No, we did not.
That was kind of weird. I mean, he kind of passed out during the flowers attack. He said something, like, while he was passed out, almost like the orchids, the giant flowers, were trying to, like, communicate with him. But I couldn't make out what he was saying.
J.L.?
Thank you for coming, everyone.
What just happened?
Picard?
But it was weird because, you know, that's how it cut to the introduction. It just went, you know, they crash land, which seems like a relatively, I won't say easy, but uneventful crash landing. You know, no one's hurt.
Yeah, they managed to break free.
Yeah, it's the equivalent to, you know, gliding across a runway for the most part, a little rougher, but yeah, then Picard has this episode where he kind of just spaces out.
Wouldn't it be a good thing that they were able to kind of glided in like that? I mean, that just kind of shows you how good of a pilot that he is.
Well, yeah, how much control of it did he have? I mean, we're talking about 300 years from now or 400 years from now when there's no manual stick, there's no flaps, there's no rudders, it's just thrusters, but in all the systems are down. Did he really land it like that, or did he just get lucky and was somehow the ship was able to glide in?
Well, I thought that they managed to break through the flower and activate thrusters to slow down their descent, and I think the rest was kind of him to be able to use the thrusters, because they were able to get some means of I was going to say motivation, but that's not the right word. Movement or momentum. Yeah. They were able to get some force to be able to guide them in and slow them down. So I think that's kind of on Rios that.
Well, then it would be. I don't remember that, which is weird because I watched the episode not even 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more.
I'm rewatching it now.
It was still weird that Picard had an episode like that going into the intro credits. Coming out of the credits, you kind of realize what's going on, and you know, Girardi's looking over him and ran some scans with an old tricorder, and then she kind of thinks
I have no idea what that tricorder would work.
Why it would?
Yeah. I mean, I get it. It's supposed to be like an old school tricorder. It's supposed to be like 200 years old, different technology, but why wouldn't it be able to siphon the power? Why couldn't they just use regular trend? You know, what makes, the energy source of that tricorder, of the old school tricorder, different than the rest of the ship. That's the only piece of technology that seems to work. You know, even Rios has to use a lighter to see, and yet this tricorder works. Like, I feel like it was just kind of thrown in as an appeasement thing.
Well, it's one of those things where I didn't think it was a 200-year-old tricorder. She was saying old. I was thinking, you know, because they use a tricorder on the Enterprise in the Next Generation.
Yeah, but that was the original one from the original series. That was the OG tricorders.
Okay, so you're talking about 120-year-old tricorder?
No, probably closer to 200. OG was 23rd century, and they're almost in the 25th. So yeah, probably 150 to 175 years ago.
Okay. Well, long story short, the point I was going to make was, because you brought up, why is there still power in this tricorder? Well, it's similar. Think of the tricorder as your phone at 100% battery, and it's been turned off the whole time. And then lightning strikes, you lose power in your house. You could still turn on the phone and use your phone. It's not like the flower sent out an EMP. We're talking about the flower drained the ship's power. So, for example, anything plugged into your house and anything that requires to be plugged into your house would not be working. But things like cell phones or tablets or laptops, that would work. But a desktop wouldn't work unless you had an external battery source.
Well, and then my question would be, if tricorder technology still wouldn't be integrated into the ship, it would still be separate. Why couldn't you use those tricorders then?
Well, maybe that's because they jumped. This ship is new enough to where they don't rely on tricorders anymore. You know, from the time TNG happened to the time we're at now, they phased out the tricorders and then just run on ship-based systems to perform medical evaluations.
I mean, they could. I just don't see why they would, and it doesn't quite make sense. Why take the human element out of it? You know, especially in a scenario like that, to where if you lose power and you lose all that, you're in a crisis and you're in an emergency, you're completely shit out of luck.
Well, that's why they got a backup system, the old school first aid kit tricorder.
I mean, I could kind of see the logic, but it just doesn't make sense.
It's like your standard first aid kit.
Well, I mean, then they would use their own separate tricorder. So you wouldn't have surgical equipment from 150 years ago for your first aid kits today. You would use modern new ones, just updated versions of it.
Well, I can't speak on the tricorder. I didn't get a good look at it from this episode. I don't remember the original series tricorders, or even before that. I vaguely remember DS9 and the TNG tricorders. I can't speak on the age of that tricorder. She says ancient. I thought back to the last time they used it, which was 30 years ago in TNG.
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to double check. Maybe it's... I thought it was the older one based off of the sound. I recognize the sound from the Next Generation, or not the Next Generation, the original series one. And you know, because they do it again in Deep Space Nine. It's actually one of my favorite episodes. I think it's Tribble in Paradise, where they go back to the original series episode and they go into the Tribble episode of the original series, the Deep Space Nine cast, and they bring back the OG tricorders. So...
we'll just agree to disagree, and we'll move on discussing the episode.
Yes, I think we spent enough time talking about tricorders.
We'll talk about these awful picnic tables again. No, just kidding. We won't talk about that. I am tired of seeing those damn picnic tables.
You really hate those picnic tables.
I don't get why 300 years from now they're having to use picnic tables that were designed 30 years ago. I just don't get it. Doesn't make sense to me. Come up with a new design, figure something else out.
They're cheap. I don't know. Maybe the production crew's cheap. Or we're too lazy to go that in depth about it.
Maybe. Still driving me bonkers. It takes me out of the sci-fi element, because I can relate to those tables. I sat at those tables in high school. So it just pulls me out of the futuristic sense of the show.
Yeah.
You know, you watch a sci-fi show, you don't really want to see shit that you could relate to. Not entirely, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you want to see it to some aspect, but you don't want something like picnic chairs to be the exact same thing, but...
I know, so that's why it pokes at me, because it's, you know, it just pulls you out of that, and I don't like that.
All right, well, Steve does not like the picnic tables. Moving on.
No, but with this picnic table scene, this is when Picard drops the bomb that he has a whatever brain condition, and you know, he's dying. He's like, you better not treat me differently because I'll kill you.
Yeah, this is the first time he's telling everyone. He's very blunt about it, in almost a Picard manner, but not quite like Picard.
Yeah, he was like, I'll go Pepe Picard and I'll kill you.
Yeah, I don't know. So, Picard was kind of an asshole. I figured Ralphie would be a little bit more devastated.
Yeah.
I figured since she's starting to sober up, she's starting to get more connected. She really, you know, she likes Picard. So I figured, same with Girardi, probably wouldn't have cared. She likes Picard. Well, Soji probably wouldn't
care. I mean, they all cared a little bit because they've been on this journey for what I think is probably at least a week or two. I don't know.
Right, but it would have had a different impact if he was telling Riker and Troy and, you know, the people who really cared about him. It would have been a completely different story.
And you see it. You can see it when he's breaking the news to them all that Rafi is a little bit devastated. She doesn't say anything at this point, but you can tell that she's taking it. It, you know, she's shocked. She's not sure how to take it.
Mm-hmm. And that's something you got to appreciate with these actors. You know, at least with all Star Trek Picard's fault, I will say this. I think the acting was probably the best part about this entire series. I think I'd say that now, that the acting really elevated the series.
Yeah, I'm sure as hell wasn't the storyline.
No, it wasn't.
Shots fired.
Oh, no.
But
here's something that I noticed. So you pointed this out, or we pointed this out with the picnic tables about maybe it was just kind of poor, you know, directing or poor set budgets or whatever the hell. They did the same thing with the Borg cube. You know, they say that it looks like it's in pretty bad shape after it crashed. And then,
oh yeah,
you know, when they're showing that panned out view, it looks completely fine. I'm like, maybe the CGI team just screwed up.
There's a little puff of smoke right there. Because there's a little, you know, little black cigarette smoke coming out. This ship is in horrible, I mean, the worst kind of condition that I've ever seen the Borg. It's just awful.
Oh, I know, right? It's like, how could anybody survive that? There's a little bit of smoke and a little bit of damage.
Yeah.
I mean, how could anybody survive that? Oh, wait, everybody survived it, apparently.
I didn't get that either. It was like, it was visually, the story was telling me one thing.
Story was saying one thing, but the CGI was a different.
Yeah, and it was like, come on, there was a disconnect here because the ship didn't look that damaged. I mean, you could have at least seen it on fire and, you know, puming smoke, but it was like a small campfire coming out of the goddamn top of a cube.
Yeah, somebody threw a firecracker at it or something.
Yeah.
Nothing so bad.
Yeah. So, I didn't get that. Didn't like it. And then they walk onto the cube and, you know, you kind of get a uplifting scene a little bit where, you know, Picard finds out Elnor is still alive, finds out Seven was on the cube. I think that threw him off. He wasn't expecting her to come back.
Yeah, I don't think any of them were.
Yeah, and then he gets recognized as Locutus.
Yeah. Oh, poor Picard.
Yeah, and Picard's like, he's shocked, but I still wanted that's motherfucking Locutus. It's not happening, though. You know, on the cube, they're, you know, the similar situation happened where they lost all power, so the XBs, Elnor, Seven, they're all trying to restore power, at least to the sensors, and they end up activating these sensors and finding out how many war boobs.
War boobs. The Romulans are sending all the boobs they got at us. Using their milk cannons to fight us.
Sending them two at a time. Two at a time, fellas. But they're sending all the war boobs
Resistance
at them.
Resistance is futile.
Matter of fact, it's 218 different pairs of war boobs coming after him from Romulan's base. I'm sticking with it.
All right, we'll stick with it then. All right, so we got the 218 war boobs, but they're just going to be concerned with the first 109 boobs. I guess the other side doesn't matter. Maybe it's like boob hep full kind of thing.
Yeah, I think they're going to worry about the right boobs. I guess
don't forget about lefty.
Rios and Rafi make that sarcastic joke. Well, I guess we only have to worry about the first 108 boobs, otherwise, you know, we're screwed.
You're not in a good way.
Didn't get it. That joke, I don't know. For me, it fell flat, and I didn't understand it.
So the joke on the war boobs fell flat. Story of your life.
Yep. Yep. When Picard leaves the cube, they go to what what Rafi calls Synthville,
which is actually a pretty good name for it.
Yeah, I liked it. That was a creative. I liked it, Synthville. But her, Rios, and Picard all go there, and they meet, and Soji. And they meet the colony. We'll call it a colony. What the hell? And
yeah, I guess
you see all these. You see all these synths, and then you meet the Dr. Soon, played by Brett Spiner. I forgot what they said his first name was.
Alton. It's Alton Soon. Sung.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you spelled it as Song. S-O-O-N-G. Sung. S-U with the little like asterisk over it. Sung.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but that's how it's supposed to be.
For me, this is when the episode gets a little more interesting because you get a little more information. You find out that they've, you know, here is where they discuss.
So basically you're kind of thinking that, hey, this maybe is another android that they made in the image of Data, but it turns out to be Alton Sung, Dr. Noonien Sung's son. And he, you know, he even joked about it saying that he had me, but created Data.
Well, he said it.
So I guess
the opposite way. He created Data, like Data was his preferred son, and then had me. So, yeah, this is where the episode picks up for me a little bit.
Yeah, and then me too, especially since this actually does make sense. You know, they in one of the episodes in The Next Generation, I think it's season 5, they have an episode to where you meet Data's mother, who was the wife of Dr. Noonien Sung, Data's creator. And that, well, basically how that storyline went was, the mother turned out to be an android, but there actually was a mother, and the mother was killed in the crystalline entity attack, but she managed to escape. But they didn't say anything about a son at the time. That's why I'm like, okay, it could be, but they could have a kid, but it makes sense, but it's also a little bit confusing because they never talked about it in The Next Generation, but there was reference to he did have a wife. So it does, it's plausible in the Star Trek story.
Yeah, and I forgot about that, where he essentially transferred his wife's consciousness into that android.
Mm-hmm. Which, like father, like son, apparently. We'll get to that later, though.
Yeah, and, you know, this is where it kind of, I mean, I didn't even think about that watching the episode about that episode of TNG.
Yeah, I didn't either. I didn't even think about it until you just brought it up right now.
Yeah, that's interesting, because as we find out a little later in the episode, that, you know, there's a subtle reference that he's talking with Dr. Girardi, where he's trying to figure out how to transfer consciousness from essentially into a synth.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually, again, that's actually been in a couple other episodes, because we bring up that episode where he transferred his consciousness into his mother, first mother, into a different android body. But if you remember in season 2, episode 6, I think, they go to a planet to where they meet Data's, quote, air quote, grandfather, to where he's kind of like his grandfather. And I remember this episode because Data gets his body taken over by Dr. God, I can't remember his name. I remember the episode, but I don't remember his name. But he gets taken over his consciousness, and they actually have to weed out the doctor's consciousness and put it in a separate entity. He was the first one to come up with that idea of transferring consciousness from your mind to a computer. And it was his grandfather who taught Soon everything that he knew. That's why he wanted to be known as his grandfather. So I don't know if you remember that episode or not.
Vaguely rings a bell.
So they've brought that up a couple times.
Yeah. Obviously, Sung Soon. Sun Soon.
Why haven't they done that yet? That'd be a great name for it. For like Sung a kid Soon. For the Soon. Sung Soon.
Sung Soon. But, Sung, you know, Soon. The son obviously didn't know that his father was able to transfer consciousness into a synth already. So I guess he was trying to figure out his own way to do it.
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, Ira Graves. That's who it was. Dr. Ira Graves. If okay. I only had a heart. Truckies will get that.
So, but one interesting scene I found out right after they got to camp is Soji's and Dodge's, I guess, we'll call her older sister in Sutra, can mind meld. I mean, obviously is fascinated with Romulan culture, or fascinated with Vulcan culture, and figured out how to mind meld.
That's the weird one for me. Like, I don't understand how she was able to do that. Well, it's nice to know that I wasn't the only one confused about that.
Well, it makes me feel better that, you know, the quote-unquote expert is confused about it, because from my understanding, Vulcans have a slight telepathic ability, and that's how the mind meld works.
Right.
So for a synth in Sutra to do it, that, you know, I essentially threw my hands up and I was like, what the fuck?
Well, yeah, I mean, it confused me too.
I have in my notes, that's like a dozen question marks behind her ability to mind meld. It's like, what?
Yeah.
I don't understand it. I mean, maybe another telepathic entity like a Betazoid could figure out their inability to mind meld, but I just find it hard to believe with a synth.
Yeah, and even for Vulcans, mind melds are very difficult things to do and require a lot of focus and discipline, and you can actually get people sick if you don't know how to do it properly. That's something that they talk about in Star Trek Enterprise. So mind melds are very dangerous, and that's why every time somebody brings up a mind meld in Star Trek, the doctor's always like, no, you shouldn't do that, it's dangerous, there's risk, I know more than you do. But, you know, it's
Star Trek, and then so also that it's like it transfers a lot of emotion, and without Vulcans they don't really express emotion, so much is going into, if it's a human recipient, you know, you're catching a lot of emotions and a lot of shit going on.
It's a very personal thing.
Yeah, because you're sharing each other's thoughts.
Yeah, in Enterprise, they even refer to it as a kind of sex, like kind of like Ponthar, but not. It's kind of like the taboo, kind of like sex, to where they just don't talk about it. They don't. It's not something that they like to do in Enterprise, and it was actually forbidden to do any mind melds whatsoever. Until they figured out that everybody can actually do it. But yeah, I don't understand it either.
And then I liked how the mind meld, it felt like it was a good minute long. But the most important part of the mind meld was when they said, your evolution is their extinction. So we go through this whole mind meld with, you know, all about life, blah, blah, blah. Don't really give a shit about. You could have cut all that out. Not really, because whatever. And the most important thing was the last part, because for the synths to evolve, it required the extinction of living beings.
And they put that beacon there as kind of a guidepost for synthetics. Rather, so that kind of makes sense on why all the Romulans kind of freaked out the first time that they did it. Because when they're looking at it, they suggest what was her name? Sutra? The chick who looks like Jonna's sister, or the Jonna's sister.
Jonna's sister, or I refer to her as the Guardians of the Galaxy gold chick, but not as golden.
I don't get why they did that. Like, they tried to make everybody golden, but have their own skin, and yet Soji and Hoshi get their normal skin, like...
Well, here's... Okay, that's a good point, and I thought about it while watching the episode, because they all have different skin tones, and I think the more golden-looking skin are the older versions. And as they lighten up and as their eye colors start to become more human-like, are the newer models. So Sutra is one of the older models, one of the first models. And then the next editions, you know, he was able to give them a lighter skin, a more human-like skin. And then, you know, the next one got even more human. And then eventually they looked totally human. So you're seeing the evolution process of creating these synthetics.
Yeah, the son was able to perfect what the father was able to accomplish once and be able to recreate it. And so, okay, I guess that makes sense. And he just gets better every time. Okay, that does kind of make sense.
Eventually, they got Dodge and Soji, which is, you know, as human as androidally possible.
Yeah, okay, and then that makes sense why they had him infiltrate 3 years ago then, because they were able to give him the good enough skin to do it or to pass.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, anyways, I kind of got off to the point that I was trying to make. So the mindfuck device on that planet that the Romulans were using, it would make sense that that's why they kept going crazy, because it's not meant for human minds, it's meant for synthetic minds. And maybe that's why they were able to do the the Vulcan mind melt, was because they are capable of doing it. And that's why that post was there, maybe to signify that they are capable of viewing these things if they come in contact with it. But the mind melt aspect of it is kind of confusing. Yeah, but did you notice that in the clip scenes of the flashback, one of the robots kind of looked like the robot from iRobot?
Oh,
it looked exactly like.
Yes. Yeah. And during the mind melt. Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
You said clip scene. I was thinking of the scene when it came from the intro song. That kind of reminded me as a teaser trailer. But yes, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, yeah, I get where that could have been confusing. But yeah, it kind of reminded me just like the iRobots. Who knows? Maybe iRobots canon in the Star Trek universe.
Maybe. Probably.
Maybe that was the first sentient species that turned on their humans.
Could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been. But from here on out in this episode, you get there's a lot of quick scenes and a lot of cut scenes, because it's, you know, it does that thing where it starts telling one story from, for example, Picard and Girardi, and then it jumps to Narek got caught and arrested, and then it shows Narek and get thrown in jail, then it's back to Picard and Girardi, or was it a three-way conversation? But either way, you get like 10 seconds of this scene, 10 seconds of that scene, back and forth, until you get to what could be considered the climax of the episode, which is, you know, Sovereign Sutra. Sovereign, because that's the name of the Guardians of the Galaxy race.
Oh, I was kind of hoping you would say something about the war boobs when he comes to the climax. Oh.
No, I didn't set myself up for that.
Yeah, it's okay. I tried to.
You come to the climax. I mean, you find out a lot of information. Picard and the gang don't plan on staying at the colony for the night. They plan on going back to the wreckage. Girardi wants to stay to help Soong work on some things. Narek is in jail trying to play innocent. Picard, and then it cuts to, you know, Picard's trying to, he sends a message to the Federation saying they made first contact. They want diplomatic
protection.
Yeah, like protection or
something. Diplomatic envoy or
something. Something that would, you know, so when the Romulans evolve, they can't interfere. Because now it's a sensitive situation of first contact.
Right. Well, I mean, it's still going to be tough dealing with 218 Romulan war boobs, so.
Yeah, with all those war boobs, it's going to turn into an orgy in space.
Pretty much. Talk about a clusterfuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
But.
Well, it's more of a gangbang.
Well, I guess it would be unless, like, somebody showed up to help.
Yeah. And I won't say, I mean, 218 is a lot, but I don't think that's their entire fleet size.
Ooh, okay. Well, no. Oh, I had something I want to bring up, but I actually do want to answer this question real quick. So, I mean, 218 does sound like a big amount for a fleet. But if you know, your mistake is you never finished watching Deep Space Nine. If you finished watching Deep Space Nine, you realize that that's about how large a fleet is. So they'll have like multiple fleets. So in Deep Space Nine, they had battles of 1,000 Federation starships with, you know, thousands of Klingon warships going up against thousands of Jem'Hadar warships and thousands of Cardassian warships. So you would have massive thousands of ship battles. So 218 is a lot in peace. In war, it's not a lot.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, number quantity wise, like you're saying, it's a lot, but it's probably just one fleet where they probably have five other fleets, so they probably have 1,000 ships under the Romulan Navy or whatever.
Well, I don't know what they would have now that their empire's
Well, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, it's definitely it, but I'm saying that could be what it is. They could be sending two fleets, so it's more of, you know, 100 ships per fleet. We don't know the exact details.
Right. Well, I mean,
so that's just where I was going at. I mean,
yeah, it could be, but we also got to remember the Romulan Empire or the Empire got split, because with the supernova, the new supernova split the Empire into a Republic and to a continuation of the Empire.
It's a lot, but we don't know how much it is a lot compared to their fleet. Is it all of their fleet or all of their ships that they have available? Is it 5%? We don't know.
Well, yeah, that's fair.
218 war boobs.
It's a lot of war boobs.
Yeah, moving on. I mean, it feels like we're jumping a lot in this episode, but the episode we watched jumped a lot, so it's
yeah, we're just going with the episode.
So yeah, we're just rolling the wave as much, or riding along the wave as much as we can.
Now, here's the question that I had earlier. So we talked about it, about Soji, about whether she had a vibrating vagina, but said maybe not, since she was supposed to be secret human. Do you think any of these other androids might have the vibrating vagina?
I'll say this. With Soom's dad being as thorough / pervy, giving Data the capability to get an erection. And
fully functional in multiple techniques.
Yes, and programming to be fully functional in multiple techniques. Chances are they got him.
And you got to keep in mind, Soom's been on this planet by himself for a long time, with no other humans.
Yeah, but then it's like having sex with your children. It's like androidal incest.
I mean, he still makes them.
He considers them as babies.
Yeah, that's true. But maybe he could construct a wife. Soong did that. Papa Soong did that.
Yeah, but Papa Soong did that using the likeness and, you know, creating a pretty much android clone of his wife and transferring her consciousness into that being.
Yeah, but I mean, he's still a man. We're talking about... Like, even just to be by yourself on a planet for yourself for, you know, for 15 years and not have the touch of another woman, or of a woman, like, that would be hell. I mean, I would at least create my own wife. Maybe the sexual frustration is forcing him to work harder.
What would you call it, Handy?
Funny.
Funny. What else happened in this episode? Let's see. So Narek escapes with the help of Sutra.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we skipped over an important part, though. Like, we skipped over the part to where she has a I think you missed it in the notes. I think you even said in the notes that you missed it. The conversation between Sutra and Soji.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, you missed an important part where that's where Sutra talks to Soji about how she saw what happened in the vision. She wants to call these other artificial intelligence to help save them. And that's the part that you missed in that conversation. And that's why she goes to Narek saying, hey, I want to kill you, but I kind of need you right now, so I'm going to let you escape and so we can, you know, do this. So that's why. Yeah, that was kind of an important part you missed.
Well, you know, it was one of those things where I was eating while watching and I saw it and I knew what was happening when it was happening, but I didn't jot it down in my notes. So a couple hours later, I don't remember that scene.
Well, it was funny because I watched it a few minutes after you did. And, you know, we share a Google Doc for the fans who don't know this when we're doing our notes, so that way we can see what each person's thinking. And as I was reading through your notes, literally right as I was reading, totally missed her conversation with her and Soji had. That's what was on in the episode. So I immediately started paying attention.
So you get that conversation where she wants to call these beings in order to help them, essentially help them with the Romulan fleet that's coming.
Right. Because, you know, they're fucked with only 10 orchids.
Yeah. So Sutra lets Narek out of jail. And they do so by stabbing her sister. I think it's Arcadia. Stabs one of her sisters, Arcana, whatever. Stabs in the eye. And then she's deactivated.
Yeah, use like her dolphin brooch.
Yeah, her dolphin brooch that she was wearing.
Yeah, like, and a used big it to glass stab her in the eye.
But I didn't think...
Again, I don't get that either. Data was taking bullets from jumping down missile silos, getting shot with M4 automatic rifle, just getting taken bullets, and he's like, greetings. And this android gets stabbed in the eye, and then all of a sudden, she's dead.
I know. Unless this thing was like 12 inches long and pierced all the way through her positronic brain, which even then...
No, he has a tritanium skull. Like, at least that's what Data had.
Data does, but we don't know what this bitch has. We don't know how they're constructed. But my point being is that these are such advanced machinery that, you know, a human, depending on the length of the brooch, could probably survive as being stabbed in the eye. So you're telling me that this super genius who built all these freaking synthetic androids that have consciousness and
super strength, super reflexes,
he can't repair this one, or, you know, it can't survive a... Now, granted...
Well, what I'm confused about is how was Narek able to get the jump on her when she's supposed to have, you know, super reflexes, super intelligence, and super strength, and how was he able to get the brooch, surprise her, and stab her in the eye before she could figure out, process what the hell is happening?
Well, now that you, now that we're talking about it, he was with
Sutra.
He was with Sutra, and if Sutra knows the weaknesses of all her "quote unquote siblings," that's probably how it happened.
Could be.
Sutra probably killed, throwing up those air quotes again, killed her sister by exposing her only weakness, which is through one of the eyes. Which I think in the episode it was the left eye.
Yeah.
So that, yeah.
Yeah, left eye.
It had to be what happened. Because like you said, Narek, I know, you know, Romulans strength-wise and agility-wise are probably a little stronger and faster than humans, but not quick enough to get a jump on an android.
So no,
it had to be.
So.
It had to
so,
be another android.
Probably. It probably cause, was Sutra. Yeah. Because she did offer to help him escape.
Yeah, so it had to be her. So I guess that's one of the only weaknesses that they got, is being stabbed through the eye to deactivate him permanently. Still makes no sense.
No, it doesn't.
Whatever.
So, in the final scene, Sutra is starting to talk about, with all the other androids, how they need to call on the superior artificial intelligence to come and help them and save them. And then Picard's like, wait, no, we can't do that, because then they'll exterminate all living things and you'll lead to all of our annihilations by doing this.
Yeah. And she's pretty much like, ah, sucks to suck.
Yeah. And he's like, wait, no, let me, I'll be your ambassador. We'll get you off this planet. We will keep you safe. I will represent you in the Federation. Just don't exterminate all, you know, biological life. And they're like, eh, yeah, no, that's not gonna happen. Sorry, bro.
Yeah.
And then they ended up putting him in house arrest. And then Dr. Girardi. That's who I was thinking of. And then Dr. Girardi's like, well, this is what I do. Like, I mean, I spent my whole life getting to this moment. Let me, don't put me in house arrest. Let me help you. Let me be a mother to you guys. You guys need a mother. So that's kind of the way that Sung kind of portrayed her, as a potential mother for these androids. And that's kind of where we ended.
Yeah. And there's one other thing we didn't talk about, but there was also a scene where Raffi and Picard are talking before Raffi heads back to the ship, and then that's where you see Raffi kind of let it loose. She's like, I know you said we shouldn't treat you any differently or whatever, but I gotta say this, you've meant a lot to me. I've been really appreciative that I've had you in my life and everything you've done for me. And then he's like, I love you, man. Did you not catch that scene?
I did, but I just felt like you were trying to make a joke.
I didn't want to say, you know, I didn't want to say, like, she's like, well, I love you. Like, it was romantic love. It was like love between mentor,
like a father and a daughter,
mentee relationship. Or, yeah.
Yeah. And then Picard's like freaked out, like, okay. Like, he's like, he doesn't like emotions. And it's pretty obvious that he's trying not to be emotional. And then at the last second, he's like, I love you too. And then he just walks away as fast as he can.
He should have just said, I know.
That one I got.
Oh, yeah, now you get one.
Well, I mean, that I would not be a Star Wars fan if I did not know that one.
True. So, Chris, what did you think of this episode? Did you like it?
No, not really. I mean, I didn't really like it the first time watching it. I don't really like this one time watching it. I felt like I kind of had to force myself to watch it. There was a lot of contradictions, a lot of things that don't make sense. But I mean, there was a lot of... I feel like Star Trek is trying to throw Trekkies a bone, the original fans a bone, be like, oh, look at all these connections from the original series, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. Like, we're connecting all of these and throwing in all these nice little things. But, you know, at the same time, they're doing things that make no sense to the storyline, that make no sense from according to previous Star Trek history. It's like they're trying, but they're failing at the same time. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's kind of bothers me. The only thing that I really like is the acting. The acting has pretty much saved Picard for me.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Actors did a phenomenal job. They did a great job casting.
I don't think Patrick Stewart was the best actor either. I think the supporting cast elevated Patrick Stewart.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I love Patrick Stewart, but
I do.
Whoever plays Rios, he's by far, acting wise, I think he's by far my favorite on the show.
I think Soji's the actress who plays Soji. What's her name? Issa Briens. Like, she's played 5 different roles on this show so far, and she killed all of them. Like, she's done a really great job, I think.
Oh, no, she has. And Rios is the same. He's played himself, and then he's played all of his emergency systems from the ship. And they all have different accents, different personalities.
Yeah. And then Allison Phil, who plays Dr. Girardi, she's done a really great job. She does a really good job at playing that I'm really fucking freaking out right now, but I'm also the peppy, upbeat one, even though I'm killing everybody at the same time. And you can really see her trying to have that struggle within her. So, I mean, the acting, fuck. I mean, the guy who plays Narek, Elnor, Rizzo, the psycho bitch.
Hey, you didn't see her this episode.
No, we didn't. She'll probably be in the next one. I mean, I think the acting was just A+. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm with you, though, on the rest of the episode. I didn't care for it. There was parts that I liked. I liked seeing Brett Spiner. I liked some of the conversation that we got with them and his creations. Like, he even made artificial butterflies because he missed butterflies. I mean, I liked... There was a couple parts that I liked, but overall, the episode just story-wise was not there for me.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
kill it.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it! Punch it,
Huxley!
Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
So, what do we got in store for next week's episode, Steve? Our final one on Picard.
Yes, next time is Season 1, Episode 10 of Star Trek Picard. Ooh. Entitled, It in Acadia, Eagle Park. To you, for those who don't speak whatever I just tried to speak, that's Et in Arcadia Ego Part 2.
I mean, we should have been able to figure out the title since the title of 9 was Et in Arcadia Ego Part 1.
Yeah, it's really hard to screw it up, but Steven finds a way.
Oh, when there's a will, there's a way.
There's not much of a synopsis on CBS All Access besides, we're obviously going to see the Romulans drop out of warp into orbit and all hell possibly break loose. So look forward to watching this season finale. I mean, as much as this first series has been, it's kind of going to be a bittersweet thing to wrap up season one of Picard and then move on to our next series.
I'm excited. Like I said, I'm excited to get onto the Mandalorian, kind of get off Star Trek for a little bit and try learning some new stuff, especially how awesome the Mandalorian is.
Yeah, I think we'll be off Trek for a little while. I mean, we might touch on Discovery and, maybe do a season one, part one and two, do a 2-episode breakdown of some of those seasons. Maybe not go episode to episode, but time will tell.
Yes, time will tell.
Time will tell. There's a lot more series we want to cover other than Star Trek and Star Wars. We want to get to Altered Carbon. We want to touch on the Orville. We want to touch on, I think, The Expanse, maybe Westworld. There's a whole list that's probably a mile long that we can go through.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's plenty in this the sci-fi universe that we can get into. I'm hoping to hear more news on the a new Battlestar Galactica. I'm looking forward to that. Did you see the new trailer for Discovery on CBS? It wasn't a lot. I just noticed Michael's Lieutenant Michael just standing on a planet with a Federation flag, a torn Federation flag. I saw that when I was rewatching it today, so I don't know if you noticed that.
No, I didn't catch that. I usually cut it off once it goes into the next time or whatever Picard.
I usually do too, but this time I didn't. because I wasn't paying attention, and then I just noticed it. So apparently Discovery is going to be coming out soon, so we might touch on that when that comes out.
Yeah, we might touch on it, or Lower Decks, or like I said, we'll probably touch on it. Like I said, don't want this to be an exclusive Star Wars, Star Trek podcast. We do want to dive into those other shows. That'll do it for this episode. Thank you everyone for listening to Deep Space High. Join us next time as we finish up with season one of Star Trek Picard.
And don't forget to keep the conversation going on Twitter with hashtag Tacos and Trek and hashtag Deep Space High.
And let us know how we're doing by reviewing Deep Space High on Apple Podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe and share our show. I'm Jedi Master Steven.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris. And until next time, live long and prosper.